welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rusick Podcast. We are a roots music podcast based out of Nashville, Tennessee, where we talk to the local music scene and beyond.
Today we have Sterling Drake. Sterling is a country artist, songwriter, Montana ranch man, and overall real swell guy.
Subscribe to the channel. Check it out.
Nailed it.
I never get it. It never gets me tingled.
ASMR.
I think it's like
I don't get it either.
Yeah, it's for girls, man. I don't get that stuff. I tech deck.
Oh my god! Unrelated to tech decking, sadly. How did the whole Montana thing happen? Like, how did you kind of fall in love with it out there?
Horses and just kind of. Yeah, it was like an unnurtured thing for me for a while. Like, I was around horses and stuff growing up in high school. Uh-huh. And
because you're from Florida originally.
Originally, yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I really, my grandfather ranched in Florida. So I had this like romantic impression of like a cowboy of the whole thing.
As we all should.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think people think of Florida when they think of Disney World, but there really is like a massive cattle market and historically like some of the oldest ranching land in the country and has its own really rich, diverse agricultural, community. Less so these days than there used to be because it's grown a lot. But I say that because like my grandfather ranched down there, and at a young age we moved around a lot. My dad moved us all over. We lived in the Northeast and the South, and so I got like this healthy dose of like country and suburban and urban. And I think I had this romantic view of my grandfather and thought of him highly. So I had this kind of impression at a young age. He was my introduction to country music, to cattle, the horses, and that whole nine yards. But we lived all over. And then by the time I was in high school, I was up in the Northeast in the great cowboy state of New Jersey. Not a place people typically think of as like rural or agrarian, but we did live in like a very like a predominantly Amish community. You know, we probably we lived on a few hundred acres on a farm there, and we were probably the smallest property around. Living in the Northeast, there really is a lot of countryside up there too. So we had horses, and we had, you know, we had like 80 acres of corn and just a different lifestyle. But I really fell in love with the horses, and we had boarded people's horses. I eventually got my own, and I loved it. And then I think whenever I had like my two passions were always music. I played in bands and stuff up there in high school, and I was always writing songs, always listening to country and folk music. And I think that was another passion I wanted to nurture. I had the horse thing, grew up around cattle, and really wanted to pursue it. So I kind of shot out west when I had the opportunity and landed in Montana. Colorado was a site for me. My grandfather ranched in Colorado when he was a young man, so I wanted to see what that was like. I was in Virgin, Utah for a little bit. I did anything, working on a guest ranch or just for a boarding place or anything to get me in the door, and then wiggled my way into like better jobs doing the ranching thing, packing jobs, whatever it might be. And then that kind of brought me to Montana. And I think once you just, I don't know, the grass up there, the country, the culture kind of really was like, this is probably where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like an attempt to just go there. And it was a genuine like accident that I think I fell in love with it. And I felt so received in a place there. And the music thing kind of fell in there. I mean,
that's so beautiful.
Yeah. So I was able to kind of pursue both of those things, and it's home. I mean, I think I'd say itinerant childhood. I didn't really like spend too much time in one place. So I never felt like I had a home or like this strong structure. My parents moved away from home when they were young, and no generation of mine has stayed in one place. So I kind of felt like if I'm going to choose where I'm going to be, I think this is where it's going to be. So,
that's great.
Yeah.
What one thing I'm curious about is the sort of through line of this kind of music in your life, because it seems like this is something that's always been present in your life and being exposed to this kind of music. But then, I know that people get to this kind of music through a lot of different routes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, at what point did you Because I know, like, you know, we had our buddy Chris on here, Chris Weisberg.
Oh, yeah.
Like, fucking, you know, you guys go back to, since, like, fucking high school and stuff. And, like, you know, I know you guys were, like, into, like, the hardcore scene. Like, I was in, like, fucking math rock when I was, like...
And I've known you guys for a long time,
we've
too,
known each other for
you're, like, my
7 years now or whatever it's been, which
first
is crazy.
Two friends I ever made in Nashville were you guys.
Our very first...
Unfortunate for me, but...
I think within the first, like, God, like, month or two we were out here, we had a tour, and you came out with us, like, as, like... it was fucking hilarious.
The merch guy.
Yeah, you were a merch guy.
I was whatever. Yeah, I played a little bit of bass, a little bit of whatever you needed.
That's war stories we can talk about, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that a long-winded way of saying that we all have these different routes of getting to this kind of music.
Yeah.
When in your life did you feel sort of captured by that music enough to feel like, okay, this is what I kind of want to commit myself to one degree or another?
Yeah, I don't know. I think my pursuit as a songwriter and then my pursuit as a musician kind of were not always like the same route. I mean, I was always writing music, and my introduction to music was Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash. Like, my mom showed me that stuff at a young age. And then my dad was into Hank Williams.
That's all you need right
now. I figured it all out. My dad taught me how to play Hank songs and like the Animals and whatever he was kind of vibing on. He played guitar and taught me a bit. So I learned how to sing and play through him. And then my mom was always in all sorts of music, but the first stuff that really resonated with me was Bob and Johnny. So I think as a songwriter, rooted in country, knowing that stuff, then my grandfather being a massive, like, Willie, Waylon, Roger Miller, Bob Wills, Ernest Tubb, like, that was always stuff that was around.
Man, you're just all the good shit right
there. Well, yeah, really fortunate, but my parents were very musically literate. My grandfather just had this, like, he was just... tried and true country dude. But I think, you know, but I found, you know, as a drummer and at the time I played electric guitar, I'd play anything to play music in high school. And I'm a product of our generation. So, and then living in the Northeast in high school, the hardcore thing was massive. I mean,
did you start, because I know you started as a drummer, but did you play anything, or like that was the first thing you kind of played in that setting? But that's the very first instrument?
Yeah, I learned that at probably like 6 years old. I was just kind of smacking things.
I think people who start on drums, that's such a fucking great way to do it. Because if you have that fucking solid time, that can make a world of, like, you started as a drummer too.
I did,
I think it can make a world of difference.
Yeah,
I never really like got that good at, like, I transitioned to guitar pretty on it. I was never like a good drummer, but first couple years of playing music I was on drums.
No, I think I agree. I started on drums, and then I had this inclination to write music that came about like 12 years old. And so I needed I needed a medium to learn how to do that, so the guitar kind of came in there. I mean, I've written all sorts of stuff, but it was always kind of folk and country based. But I think, you know, we've obviously seen a rise and a resurgence in country music. I wanted nothing to do with it in high school. I like didn't care. I mean, you know, there was like, it just seemed like it wasn't my thing. It was my folks thing. It was my grandparents thing. But I mean, like, tons of people, even people that come from the South, maybe they live out West or whatever it is, they have ties to this music because we are only a few generations removed. And it felt near extinct, but now people are seeing a renewed appreciation, thinking, oh, hey, maybe this music isn't just for, like, Crackle Barrel loving, you know, whatever. Like, this music can be mine just because I don't fit the norm of, like, what it was like in 2004 to, like, country music. They're like, wait a minute, but I love Waylon, but I love Johnny. Like, I might not like whatever name.
It does seem like, particularly in the last 6 or 7 years, there's been a huge shift in that, whatever that sort of, I hate the label, but that sort of Americana vibe is, the perception of that in the culture has shifted a lot. And people, I think, are appreciating that kind of music in a different way that that is really beautiful.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably like a decommercialization of the music all over again.
Absolutely. And I'm sure the technology and the internet and just our way of consuming music, because that's changed so radically so recently, I think that's a huge part of it. And people are just kind of appreciating it in a different way. But
yeah, well, I think that too. I mean, tons of like hardcore and punk expats in country music, but like, you can't tell them that they're not country. Like, you might have been born in Kentucky on a farm, and like, they were just products of our generation, and they still probably enjoy other music, but like, you know, they belong in the genre. They're just all of a sudden realizing, you know what, like, I do like this music. You know, for a while it didn't really resonate with me, but you know, I'm from this world, and like, And then beyond that, even if you're not, like, I hate this, like, gatekeeper kind of mentality that you see in music a lot.
Oh, you see it in everything.
Yeah, yeah, like, for sure. Yeah. If you're not a fucking cowboy, you can't listen to what I listen to, you know? Yeah. No, I think country music is a form of roots music. It's a form of folk music. And that is really needed now for so many reasons. I mean, it reminds us of the people that come before us, the stories of that come before us. And it gives us, like, a connection to place. Mm-hmm. And I think in America, where, like, culture is just something that's being diminished for a multitude of reasons, politically, economically, but, like, we're lose our culture, you know, every day. And I think that people hear this music and they're, like, they get teary about it because they're, like, man, that's something that I can be proud of that America has.
And it's interesting, too, because everything is, I mean, we've talked about this quite a lot in the show, but a lot of it is really just technology and progression, and now everyone is getting fed, you know, even back 60 years ago, the diversity within American music was quite vast. A lot of it just to do with technology and the fact and the way music was spread and consumed. And now everything, you know, what you're listening to in Florida is probably you're listening to the same music that you, on sort of a macro scale, the same music is out there in the zeitgeist that's out in, you know, Washington State. And so it's a different ball game you're playing all of a sudden, which is really beautiful. You know, I think it's actually really great, but, it definitely changes things. And I think people having that level of appreciation can make a world of difference because you don't want to lose that stuff. You know, like as things get more homogenized, you don't want to lose that history.
Well, I would agree with you maybe a few years ago that, like, music was very, I guess, and I would say that I'd argue that it's kind of been that way for a long time, but especially in the early 2000s, it was really coming to a headwind of, like, this is pop, this is country, this whatever.
Yeah.
And radio is the same everywhere. But I'd say now things are different because we have, like, there's a lot of bad that's come
from... I'm talking about popular music, yeah.
Sure,
absolutely, because everything...
what is popular music, you know?
Well, what technology allows us to do now is, you know, if you were living in 1940 in anywhere in the United States, right, you had... you had a very similar diet of music regardless of where you were, right? Depending on the radio stations you had access to, you had different folk musics. Obviously, that's going to be very different. But everything is kind of its own island. And now what you have is every single person has access to all of the music that's been recorded in the last, you know, in the last 140 years
since
in their pocket,
it,
right? It's there. And so everyone can be their own little island, right? Yeah. So instead of geographically being able to place music, now everyone is their own island. And so what happens is in popular music, right, the only thing you can do to combat that is to cast the widest net possible. So everyone says, well, why does pop music all sound the same now? Well, it's because it's the only thing you can do if you're pop music. Because and everything else, and what people don't realize is everything on the fringes, the interesting stuff, there's so much more of it. It's like it's never been a better time to make music because, yes, it can seem like the stuff in the center is incredibly similar in a kind of disheartening way, and that there's not much variety and interest happening. Although I would say that even in pop music, there's incredible artistry in there, and you can find people who do interesting things. But the net cast has to be so much bigger because you're just trying to get as many people in there as possible.
The lowest common denominator.
Exactly. Because everything else on the fringe is outside of that. I mean, the music you're making can be the lump sum total of all of the shit that you like. And the music that you're making can be the lump sum. And you're going to find, because people have that ability to access music in a way that was just never possible, you're going to be able to find your people who are interested in what you're doing. And it's amazing. I mean, it's, I always am kind of fascinated by where that's going to go, because it almost makes the idea of genre something of the past in a weird way too, because again, when everyone's their own island, everyone is sort of by definition their own genre. And so it's going to be very interesting as things progress. Like, do we have this sustained dichotomy between popular music, which is just trying to be something that you can feed into the masses, and then all of the other cool shit? Or is it going to go a different, like, you just don't know. But it's a very weird place, I think, to be in music right now. And it's beautiful. I mean, I would not rather be at any other time as a creative person than right now because of that access. But it's very strange to see where it's going to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But even at the same time, and I agree. I think we can find what we like. I think it's all for the better, but you still see clicks, you still see genres, you still see trends and stuff.
For sure.
And so, I don't know, like, it's cool that people can find whatever they like, and also that artists have a little bit more sovereignty on the direction of their music. You know, I play a lot of, like, I've done the honky tonk thing. I won an award for honky tonk music, which
yeah,
really,
congrats, by the way. Thanks, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm just here to self promote everybody. I don't care about these guys. it was cool. But then, you know, I love honky tonk music. I love playing those 3-hour dance hall sets, the tradition of country music. But then that can be very, like, limiting in a certain way, and then after a while you play these bars and you meet people and everybody's having a good time, but you're thinking, like, how much of this is because I have something to say, or is it because they just want to hear a band play a good four to the floor shuffle? Mm-hmm. And I really love the music, and I say that with, like, reverence for it, but, like, as an artist you're like, okay, how can I, like, make my stamp on this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I've made maybe attempts, especially with this last record that just came out May 2nd. It's called The Shape I'm In, everybody. You
Check
can buy it,
out. It
now on CD and vinyl.
Link in the description.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, how can I maybe, like, you know, do something that's a little bit more risky and pull in and kind of reformat what I think of roots music and country music? There's elements of the traditional stuff in there for sure, but... I like to take it further back. I love roots music, Western music, Celtic music, Appalachian music, and, like, trying to do something to make my own mark on all these things. So I don't really know where I was going with that. I think we do have tribes, and they still exist.
This is always going to be. I don't think you can get away from that.
It's good to not let yourself get boxed in, though.
Yeah.
You know,
and
I think, you know, there is going to be some people that just want to hear that, you know, one genre they like, but I think, you know, you'll stand out more as an individual if you kind of just let yourself do whatever you want.
Yeah, and people that listen to your music will be more invested in what you're doing, not essentially, like, I've noticed that too. Like, if you stick too much to the mold of one genre, people will leave you so quick as soon as you're not in that genre, or that genre goes out of favor. Yeah. And I've kind of noticed that there's certain people, I'll go play a venue somewhere, whatever, and they don't really know much about me, but they know I won an award for honky tonk music, and they freaking love the honky tonk thing. And they're like, yeah, this is a guy. But, like, I realize, you know what? You don't care about me or what I have to sing or my songs. You just want to win over some points in a certain scene. So anyways, I'm kind of stirring the pot here a little bit.
Yeah, let's fucking go.
That's good. That's good.
Some shit out there.
That's what we like.
Yeah. No, I do think that is also just a byproduct of the time we live in, which is amazing, is that you are, as a listener, investing in artists, and in a way that, you know, you couldn't have that relationship in the past.
Yeah.
You know, like, even something like this, as silly as it sounds, you know, starting this was sort of a weird thing for both Brian and I, because, you know, Brian and I are quite private people, and to be like, you know what, let's just fucking do something where we can just be ourselves and there's no, like, veneer on it. There's no, like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a really interesting, for me, it's very counter to, like, my personality as a person, which is, you know, all of my sort of presentation and marketing as a musician has always been sort of wanting to be kind of removed from it, and not, like, I just don't, that's just not, it's a very unsmart thing to do in 2025.
Yeah.
But, like, that's just the way that I've been in the past. And once you realize, I think, that, oh no, it's all a bunch of individuals who may have interest in the thing that you're doing, and you can actually establish a relationship with those people, it changes. I think the calculation changes very quickly, you know. But it's it's an interesting time to maneuver. You know, it's kind of fucking cool. Sort of a random question I want to ask you, going back to the ranching. What is your relationship to horses? I know that's a weird thing to ask, but, like,
mercurial.
No, yeah, but genuinely, like, I always say, I think that the relationship human beings have to the relationship human beings have to horses is really fascinating.
Can't get on that topic on this podcast.
What is it for you in your life? Like, how have you
Like what? Because I think it's a very intimate thing for people to talk about. Yeah. And how did that form in your life?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a natural thing. Like I said, I had horses in like my teenage years. I was around them. The first like real horse I ever had a relationship with. Intimately. No, I'm kidding. We were living on a farm there in the Northeast, and they're leasing the place, and someone was boarding some thoroughbreds there, and I was doing martial arts. That was my thing in high school. I did taekwondo, I did wrestling, I did boxing, and that was the first time I'd really been around animals like that. Obviously, my grandfather had horses, but I didn't have, like, any discipline at that point. Mm-hmm. And so we had them boarded there, and, like, I was taking care of them. I was kind of the caretaker for the place. And so I, like, got to have this relationship with these animals, which I found in a weird way. After high school, I lost taekwondo, I lost wrestling, I lost martial arts. It just wasn't something that was, like, carried on throughout my life. And so that animals kind of took the place of what martial arts gave me, this like centered kind of state,
like a foundation
thing. It's kind of like a dancing is another thing. I'm a freaking wreck. I'm ADD, and if I don't mind, I'm an adult now, I've learned how to really regulate that sort of stuff, but something like that has always given me a center. So that was where it kind of stemmed for me. Is like when you do get into horsemanship, like getting in the round pin, or even just like the subtle things you learn on a horse, are very, very, you have to be very aware of yourself, your positioning, your body language. And it like really made me have to focus on those things that I typically wouldn't focus on. So it felt like medicating in a way. Mm-hmm. I got into the ranching side of things. I really loved the like idea of land stewardship. I felt really passionate about not only like raising animals and taking care of this land, but also like the environmental impact of like doing a good job. I mean, if you're doing the job well, you see the fruits of your labor, you see your soil and your grass, and you see the whole thing. I mean, there's something really rewarding in that physically that I really enjoy. But nowadays it's kind of, you know, I was managing a place up until 2 years ago. I had an unfortunate wreck on an ATV that set me back a little bit. I broke my arm and screwed up a bunch of whole laundry list of things. And, but it made me kind of take a step back maybe from ranching. Mm-hmm. And I realized like, okay, this will always be here. I've done a lot here. There's still much more to do, I think, and for myself, but it was kind of a sign. I was like, I have to do more music. I had previously the year before, I broke this hand on a colt.
Oh yeah. You had a bunch of shit.
I'm going in for a surgery right in 2 days to fix my thumb up. And all sorts of stuff. And then the year later, I had a bad head injury. I fell off ATV on a cliff. And then I broke this arm. And it took me like 6 months to heal. I had they put like 11 pins in here. And I, at one point, was supposed to like replace that elbow joint. It's a radial head replacement. Mm-hmm. And that was a weird, I don't have much feeling in my left hand anymore, in these three fingers. And I can't turn my wrist any more than about that.
Does that negatively affect your playing at all? Or has that been hard to like overcome?
I got to where, dude, I was like 2 days after my elbow surgery, and I was just like trying to learn how to turn my wrist back this way enough to play banjo. And so I'm sitting here going like this. No, it almost did. I've had to readjust how I play. I don't have much feeling in those fingers, so that's not great. But but it was a wake-up call. I was like, man, like, this shit is fucking hurts. So I'm going to try and focus on music a little bit. And then it naturally, like, luckily, great community back in Montana. Like, word got out, I got in a pretty bad wreck. And I was, you know, you lose your ranching job. And in America, you're financially screwed if you go to the hospital one time. So that happened. And luckily, the music thing kind of landed in a lot of, you know, stuff opened up for me there. And I leaned more into the music, worked on a record, and then, you know, started traveling a lot more. And touring opened up for me. And so that's kind of where that went. So today, to answer this long-ass question, horses, like, I'm about to buy a two-year-old colt back home. I've had, fortunately, we've got great ranching neighbors there. Like, we just branded last weekend, and I get to do that when I'm home. I've got enough, you know, experience in it where I can kind of day work and do some of that stuff. and carry my own. So I do that like kind of when I can to fill in the cracks, and I try to be home during the spring a little bit and the fall.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So again, to pivot, because apparently we're all over the place right now.
Yeah.
The new record, mm-hmm. which just came out very recently.
The Shape I'm In came out May 2nd. May 2nd. It's available now on CD and vinyl.
There you go. Everyone go listen. Go buy it and take a listen. So this is, it's been what, 4 years since your last record, right? Something like that? It's been a little bit of time.
Well, yeah. So I've put out these EPs every couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so like this is technically my first debut album because mm-hmm. it meets the threshold of being X amount of minutes, which makes it an LP, mm-hmm. not an EP. So like I can get away with saying this is my debut record.
Love it.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of tested the waters with different mm-hmm. EPs.
Why did now feel like the right time for this?
Not getting any younger. And I don't know. Yeah, I think it just took a while to figure out what I was going for. I mean, if you listen to my records, you can kind of figure out that identity crisis shift mm-hmm. in my music a lot. Like, my first record was really into the polished, neo-traditional kind of rape.
And you self-produced that first one, right?
Yeah. And our buddy Chris Weisbecker was really involved in that one, too. Good friend. And so, yeah, I went for more of that, like, Ray Price kind of clean thing. It was definitely an intention. I was like, I want to pursue this music, and what better way than to cut a record in that vein, write songs in that vein. Highway 200 was, and that was Roll the Dice. Highway 200 was like, I'm living back in Montana in a freaking bunkhouse, and we've got a few mics, and let's write some songs. And it was like tying in my interpretation of Western music, these songs that were like themed in Montana in the West. And so there's a little bit of bluegrass, a little bit of outlaw, a little bit of cowboy music in there. So I'm kind of playing those waters. And then I put out a live record at the Station Inn with a bunch of the gentlemen here in town, like Joe Spivey, Jeff Taylor, Dennis Crouch, a bunch of Time Jumpers guys, essentially. Yeah. I was really big into Western swing and what the Time Jumpers did. And so I pretty much called them up and hired them to play at the Station Inn, and we just pressed the record button.
I love it.
Yeah, and so that was fun. And then I did this small EP. It was like a folk record, just me, gut string banjo, harmonica, mandolin, doing old kind of cowboy songs, and that was back in Montana. So like, yeah, trying to bring in all these things, and then I've been using those to tour. I've been able to have a career because I just kind of went out and started putting shit out. I didn't wait until I had like the masterpiece record and $1 million in my pocket to make it work. And because of that, I like was able to go out and learn what I'd want to do and like test the waters. And again, I've gone to Europe with it now and gone to a lot of different places and just picked up pieces of other kind of corners of roots music along the way where I'm like, I love that. I love Irish music, something that wasn't initially a thing for me, but I really fell in love with. And then like drawing those like lines and figuring out what is my sound now. So this record is the first time to be like, all right, I've got enough of a basket. I've got a deep enough well of inspiration where I don't just sound like a recreation of something that's already existed.
When you got that thing done in totality, did it feel like mission accomplished?
Yeah. I was like, we did it.
That's such a good feeling.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. I listened back to it and I fucking shed a tear.
Good.
And I was emotional. I was like, yeah, dude, we killed it. And Thor Davidson.
I was going to say, Thor produced it, right?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Good old Thorby. Produced it, and you know, he was a perfect example because like he's not from America, but he's deep in the music. Like he's from Iceland, he's got this like kind of fresh perspective on it in a way that was really cool, and he's got such a like musical intelligence, and he's not afraid to like take risks and blur lines.
Such a good player. Yeah. So, like we went to college together. We went to the same roots program at school.
Yeah.
He is a fucking beast of a player.
Berkeley guys, fancy boys.
Yeah, we'll cut this part out. No. But he's a beast of a player too. And just a sweetheart. I haven't seen him in a long time, but just a super, super nice guy too. That's killer. That's really, really
He's incredible. And I met him through another Berkeley kid, Mr. Ryan Stigman, who I was playing a lot with, and especially when we were doing the dance hall thing, Ryan was like my right hand man on pedal steel, really digging into that, and I was digging into the Texas country, and met him through him. But yeah, Thor's been great because again, he doesn't like, we weren't trying to do something that already happened. It was almost like, here's the pieces of what country music is like without any context. Let's just try and make it again. Let's just like take these instruments, this like etiquette of writing music, and let's just fucking throw
it at
the
wall. Fucking great approach to take.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
I remember we were at Legion's a few years ago, I haven't been over there in a long time, but it was a few years ago. Brian and I were there, and we were just standing outside, and Stig just walks in the door, and he's like, you know, dressed up in like, you know, cowboy attire, and
no,
just like
Stig Funk.
And we're like, what's up, dude?
Yeah,
like,
dude.
It's funny.
He's like, gone he's country. Like, he's like, I play steel now. We're like, okay.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. My phone has like 5 albums on it because no one downloads music to their phone anymore, but yeah. Mine has some saved, and one of them is the Stig album. So my car randomly just turns my phone music on sometimes. So sometimes the Stig album will come on.
Yeah,
so I still listen to
it. It'd be so fun to talk to him. It'd be a good time to catch up.
But that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like all of a sudden, like country music had this resurgence, right? Yeah. Like, fucking hell yeah, Stiggy, yeah. Play country music. Hell can yeah. He's such an
that,
asset
that
for country.
That kid could play any fucking music.
I don't give a fuck what he plays.
Tear
yeah,
up.
I will listen to it. I mean, yeah. He's incredible jazz player.
He's a talented
player.
Guy.
He yeah. went through the funk world. And like, it's a perfect example. Like, we're using him as a case. Hey, Ryan, if you're listening. But, like, you know, people evolve in their taste, but it's that integrity that he took and that approach. He was a killer saxophone player for a long time, and that's all he wanted to do. He's played banjo, bluegrass music, like, check, figured that shit out, funk music. And then country was one of these underappreciated genres for a long time, and pedal steel. Like, now, dude, I can't hop on my phone without finding some, like, 16-year-old, like, kid sitting in his room just friggin' squibbity-bip-bip-bip, just ripping. And, yeah, so, like, yeah, what I'm saying is, like, all of a sudden it's cool again, yeah. And I welcome it, and nobody should tell you can't play this music because your fucking dad didn't wrestle bulls with his bare hands, you know? Look at Ryan now. He's playing for Zach Top.
Have you gotten a lot of that, of, like, people, you know,
no.
trying to be
no.
gatekeepy, yeah. or that's
no,
good?
No, I really haven't, and I think it's the thing people, imposter syndrome is something that a lot of people feel. No matter what the fuck you're doing, because we live in a world where everything is on your phone, and like, you can see somebody try and put themselves out there on the internet, and then you just see 100 comments of that dude getting ripped to shreds. Like, you kind of hypercritic of
I think
yourself.
Less of that, like, exists in real life than it's mostly just, like, losers on the internet.
Yeah,
like, hating
exactly.
shit.
Sure. I used to ride a fucking skateboard in high school, and now I do cowboy shit, so fucking what?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, dude, and don't let anybody tell you now. And honestly, I play a lot of music. I play this music and I meet people from all over, dude. Doesn't matter where. And they'll come up and they've got, like, maybe they'll have, like, old tattoo or something on their neck or something. But they're, like, they're working in the ranching industry now. Mm-hmm. Like, they were, hey, I was a hardcore kid from Boston and I made the effort to move out to Texas and I live here in the panhandle. And, you know, I work for whoever now and this is my life. And if we, the more of that, that's more welcome. The agricultural community needs more people. They need young people with young ideas and that are willing to work. So, like, why the hell would we gatekeep that and tell them, like, you're not allowed in this fucking cool kid club?
Totally.
Yeah. I don't want to be in no fucking cool kid
anything
club.
Anything like that just leaves a shitty taste in my mouth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One story that I feel like we do need to tell now that this guy is here, because I realize we haven't told this on the podcast. My possibly favorite show of all time is fucking Super Happy Funland.
Oh,
and I realized you were there for that. Do you remember
Super Happy Funland?
Oh my God. So this was
in Houston.
Houston, Texas.
Oh my God. Yeah, dude.
To this day,
hands down, the worst gig I've ever played.
That was like a fever dream.
Dude, it was insane. To this day, when Brian and I have a shitty gig,
I'm playing there next month. Okay.
To this day, Brian and I, if we have a shitty gig, Brian and I will look at each other and he'll be like, could be Super Happy Funland. I feel like this story needs to be told in this fucking show.
And I want to tell my perspective of it afterwards, too.
So we get to, we're doing a tour. This is like right after you had moved to Nashville, and you were coming on with, it was like 4 of us. And
dude, I wanted to go to South By. I was like, get me in the car. I'll fucking
do whatever.
I'll be in I don't know. I'll do something random to get there.
So we're driving to, we're like touring Texas for a couple weeks. We're going out to play South By. And one of our stops along the way is Houston. And we've got a gig at this place called Super Happy Funland. And we get there and, you know, our gig's at whatever, 7, 8 o'clock. We get there in the middle of the afternoon just to kind of show up to be like, let's check out the venue before we go, like, you know, get something to eat or whatever. We pull into the parking lot. It's like this, you know, abandoned warehouse. There's like one homeless guy kind of like wandering around yelling. And we get out of the car and I look down and I grab something off the ground, like, Brian, hold out your hand. And I drop 2 9-millimeter shells into Brian's hand, and we're like, okay, this is where we're at. All right, let's
good.
Go.
People carry yeah. here. It's a good neighborhood.
and so you know, eventually the homeless guy starts yelling at us enough that we're like, okay, let's get the fuck out of here and like go get somebody. So we come back later to load in, and it's like one guy at the venue who's, you know, he's doing everything. He's running sound. He's the door guy. He's helping us load in, right? And we're supposed to do the bill with, it's us, and there's one other person on our booking, Eden Archer, who's still out here, I think, actually, songwriter out here. She's on the bill. And then there's 2 like local Houston acts that are supposed to be on the bill. And neither of them are there. So she shows up, and we start just like loading in, you know. And we walk into this fucking building. It was like something out of a fucking fever dream. It is lined.
It looked like a serial killer's basement. Dude. And the place was disgusting.
Massive,
was
too. Freaking massive. Full of
absolutely
crazy
filthy.
Lights.
And then it was covered in like dolls.
Yeah, and like circus shit.
Circus shit.
A bunch of creepy
and
shit.
And you remember the freaking the fellow that was like serving up chili or some shit in from like a crock pot in the corner.
Oh my god, this is the crazy. I will never fucking forget. This is why I love being a musician, because of stupid shit like this. So we set up and we literally played rock paper scissors to see who would play first to get out of there.
Oh yeah.
And so I think we go on first. We play. I at some point during our, you know, 5-minute set. And we're playing to literally no one. Like, no one is in there, right?
Yeah, yeah. And besides the other band
At some point, the other band walks in. There's like 5 people walking. We're like, oh, shit, hell yeah. And then we realize it's the other band.
Yeah.
And at some point, we're playing on stage, and then a rat the size of my fucking arm runs across the stage.
There were like,
cockroaches
all over the place.
I might have just been fucking hanging outside like, goddamn.
Like zoning out.
I don't remember your show, buddy.
Oh, my God.
I don't think I was even in there.
So, we pack up and leave as soon as we're done, and I will never forget. You told me as soon as we left, the other band shows up, and apparently they're talking to the guy who runs the place, and they're like, we don't have anywhere to stay tonight, because we're just trying to get out of there. We're like, we are leaving. We're going to wherever the hell we were staying that night. And they're like, I have no recollection. And this was like probably, 6-7 years ago. And the guys are like, we don't have a place to stay tonight. Like, can we crash here? And the guy running the spot's like, oh yeah, no worries, guys. And you tell me, he's like, yeah, like I've got a big pot of chili. And you guys want something? Yeah.
He offered us some, and I'm like, yeah, no, dude, we're good.
Nah, dude, that shit been brewing for about a couple days.
Oh my God.
That place was filthy. Yeah. I just remember cockroaches
over
the place.
Where was it? It was in Houston.
Oh,
good Lord.
God. Yeah. Well, it blows my mind that a place like that, like, how is that place in business?
It reminded me of like my punk drumming days. That was some shit. I was like, oh, I know where we're immediately pull up. Oh, yeah.
I've played some like shitty rundown venues, but like that one topped it all by far.
If I die of asbestos poisoning, I know what to blame it on.
What was crazy about that too? I feel like they had told or like kind of said mercurially in a weird way, like, yeah, this is like an official South by Southwest kind of stop. Like everybody's coming here. So like, I think I was going into a thing like, oh, it's like some, you know, routed gig to South by. Cool. There's going to be a bunch of people with lanyards on and shit, but it wasn't. And I just wandered around this place. It was like a picker's dream. Well, maybe not. Maybe like a crackhead's dream. But there was all sorts of stuff there. It was nuts. It's called Super Happy Fun Time Fucking
Land. I wonder if it still exists.
I Googled it a couple of years ago because I was regaling my bandmates with this story and, you know... it was still around then, so
I think it's
I'd get a gig. I'd fucking play there.
I would go. You know what? Super Happy Funland.
I'm never going back.
We're coming back. We'll hit you up. We'll find some dates that work. We'll make it happen.
Do the podcast live at Super Happy Funland.
It was a good hang. I had my camera. I was getting into film camera stuff there, and I was taking some photos. Hey, man.
It is what it is.
That was one of those gigs where afterwards I was just kind of like, what the fuck am I doing with my life? should I pick something else?
You guys need like a Jamie from Joe Rogan equivalent here. I'm like, hey, pull up fucking Super Happy Fun Time.
That's what we usually have Alexa do.
Eventually we want to.
Hey, Alexa,
When we started doing this, had an Alexa plugged into the house. I don't know why they didn't change the fucking name, but we would be talking, and then inevitably we'd start talking to Alexa, and every time we would, the Alexa in the house would turn on.
It was a problem.
It was a big problem. Yeah, we got rid of that bitch. We had to just like throw it away. It was, man.
So last time I saw you, we were randomly in North Carolina seeing Kaleo. Is that how you say it?
Oh, shit. Yeah, dude.
Yeah. And we're standing in line for the venue, and then I hear the guy on stage like, oh, hey, my name's Sterling Drake. And I was like, oh, shit, I know that guy.
Yeah, that was me.
That was kind of funny randomly running into you. How'd that all come about? How'd you start playing?
Yeah, those guys are awesome. So Thor, who produced my record, plays in that band, and I've gotten to know them quite a bit. I did some dates in Iceland, and Ruben, their guitar player, played with us, and then JJ and I have become friends and just kind of hit it off. He spends a lot of time here in Nashville, and it's always around the time I was here. They were cutting their record when we were cutting ours, and just really got to know him and really enjoyed. We're from very different worlds, you know, but I don't know. He really is deep in the music, loves the music, and we bonded over Paul Brady and a bunch of Irish stuff, and yeah, now we've just had a really good friendship, and they played up in Montana at the Kettle House, and they're like, "Hey, man, we're actually coming through. Do you want to play with us while we're here?" And I was like, "Hell yeah!" So I made that one work, and then they're like, "We're going to be in North Carolina. You want to come to North Carolina?" So I was like, "Sure, I will do that."
Nice.
But that was at Rabbit. That was the day before the Helene came through there.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Wild, because we left the next day, and as we were leaving, it started like coming down super hard. And when we were like going down the mountains in on the 40, it was like super, super bad. And then, next day we see on the news the road we were driving out on fucking collapsed.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
I flew out the next day and just missed the, because the hurricane was that next day, and just missed that. Like, I was leaving, and we were probably one of the last flights before they started probably canceling flights.
Yeah, got out of there.
Skinny teeth, guys. Right in time.
Yeah, that shit probably collapsed like a few hours after we got back. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, unfortunate.
Yeah.
Son of a gun.
Yeah, I mean, it's this kind of music. It's a journey. I mean, this is just music in general. It's all a journey, and there can be times where you think, such a super happy fun land. Why in the fuck am I doing this with my life?
But then you get to play with Kaleo at Rabbit in North Carolina.
What I want to ask you is, what are those moments in your career that you have experienced that you can go back to and think, okay, this is why I do this. This makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. Well, I will, without getting too on a fucking soapbox here, that gig is a perfect example. This record I put out, I've been touching on kind of like, how can I use my music for advocacy for a while now? Like, how can I use my platform? You know, if I'm going to continue to play music, like, what the fuck am I singing about? Like, you know, why am I really doing this? I'm like, I'm 29, about to be 30. Like, there's burnout that you deal with. I travel a lot, and sometimes you just like don't want to do shit after you've been on the road for so long. But, you know, having a message to talk about, or something that you can actually change or like better the world or be impactful. I don't know. The world's pretty fucking crazy right now. And a big thing for me that I keep hearing about living in Montana, in a small town Montana, is like just how poor the conditions for mental health are, not only for ranchers, just for people in rural America. Like, we just don't talk about it. And I play country music, you know, and I hear these stories like cowboys, you know, committing suicide and all sorts of awful stuff. And so this record, I kind of tried to highlight in one of our songs, Worthy of the Name, kind of like what it really means to be a cowboy. And it touches on domestic abuse, alcoholism, and those sort of things. And I learned, you know, there's a lot of resources for folks that live in rural communities and, you know, that are available that we just don't talk about. And the conversation around mental health is just like so diminished, I guess. I mean, cowboys especially, perfect example. Like, they are the American billboard, like, masculine figure. But, you know, in a way, it's kind of been co-opted over the years to be like, I just I just bottle all my emotions. I'm okay with working long hours and for very little pay. You know, we don't get any of the treatment or the protections that other workers get in the country. We don't have hourly wages. We just work all the time. And as soon as I lose my job, I lose my identity. If I break my body so bad, hey, I'm 60 now and I can't even walk around and I lose my job, then what even am I? And people just kind of go off the deep end. But to tie it into that show, So we were getting ready to release this record and we played that and I just offhand mentioned, you know, hey, you know, if you're dealing with mental health and you or someone you love works in the agricultural industry, like, just know there are resources available to you out there. And I had just put a resource tab on my site that links to the Farm Bureau and some government assistance programs, depending on occupation and region of the country, and then also nonprofits and stuff, and some more Christian groups as well. But whatever your method is, like, there are ways for you to take care of yourself, and you're not alone. And I would love to talk to you after the show at the merch table. And I just offhand said that, you know, it's a big show. And here We are in North Carolina, not cowboy country, but it is country. There, you know, There's plenty of farmers and there are ranchers and all that out there. And I went to the table and there was a line of people that were just ready to just say, like, hey, man, you know, we came here. We're actually from Iowa. My brother committed suicide last year. And, you know, we're used to, and then the next person, hey, my father, you know, or my son, you know, like, dude, I was like, whoa, all of a sudden, like, I'm touching on something that was so much bigger than me. I didn't feel equipped to really have that. I'm not a professional by any means in any of those things, but it was like, man, there's something that needs to happen here. And music did something there, and I can actually make a difference. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so that's what keeps me going. Another long answer for you, Casey, but...
That's what we're here for.
Yeah, but that's the thing, you know, like being able to, like, have... You know, I love the lighthearted stuff. I want to make people laugh. I want to make people feel happy. But, like, I also am not afraid to, like, communicate with you about these things. I was talking to my Uber driver on the way over here about, like, what we need to do about, you know, homelessness here in Nashville. I'm like, well, man, maybe we need a place for these people to go. And he, you know, we're talking about it. And, like, maybe not every homeless person on the street got there by their own choice, you know. And we're just having this conversation. And we're like, you know, we need to talk more. Like, this dude from North Nashville, I would have never known, you know. We would have never had a conversation had I been sitting on my phone and you know, ever. So
To tie it back into what we were talking about earlier, the technology is beautiful. It allows so many amazing things, but it's like anything else. You can get consumed by it and it can
really allow you to like disconnect from people if you let it.
Yeah.
I think that if anything, there's a natural, well, maybe it's not natural, but there's an inclination for people to be stuck in their own worlds right now. Like, the economy is tough, jobs are tough, and they expect more from you every day, whether you're a working class, like, factory worker or rancher, or you work in the corporate world. Just, like, your sovereignty is, like, kind of at risk, and because of that, we don't have time to hang out with our neighbors. We're working on the weekends. We're answering that email during our son's birthday or something. That stuff is just so real right now, and everybody needs to do what they can to make a dime. Uber driver was telling me he's got to rent an Uber. He rents a car from Hertz and Uber, and he has to work 6 days a week minimum to make it profitable for him to do that. This dude has no time to go hang out with his neighbors and stuff, and so life is just kind of going that way, it seems like. Mm-hmm. So we need to make intentions to put the phone down and be on podcasts like this and talk about crazy conspiracy theories. That's the answer, everybody.
Perfect. Exactly.
You got any crazy conspiracy theories you want to throw out there into the world?
Dude, I was kind of working on one the other day, but it's not finished yet.
Okay. Yeah. Once you get it, you know, tightened up, let us know.
Yeah.
What's next on the horizon? What's now that you've got this record kind of out there in the world, what's next?
We're touring a lot. We're playing a lot of music all over. Mostly the Northwest in the summer, and then Europe in the fall, with some select dates in Iceland in June. That'll be really fun. We're doing Under the Big Sky, which is a big festival in Montana. But one I'm really excited about is a festival that I am actually helped put on in Montana. It's called Old Salt Festival, and it's put on by a meat co-op based out of Helena on the Mannix Ranch. And it's a celebration of land stewardship through music and food and art and all the fun stuff. So we have a bunch of our Nashville friends are going to be there. You know, we've got Brennan Lee, Melissa Carper, Christina Vane, Hannah Juanita, and then Jake Worthington, and some more Americana artists like Nikki Lane. So that's going to be fun. And I've kind of picked the cast of musicians to play that deal. And it's put on by this co-op, and their effort is to, again, celebrate land stewardship and feed Montanans and show people like what a healthy agricultural ecosystem can look like. It's made up of four different ranchers, producers in Montana, and they've invested in the entire vertical of distribution for of means of production, essentially for food. So they've got the processing plant now. They've got the Old Salt Outpost, which is a burger joint, the Union, which is a butcher shop and high-end dining place. And so they've kind of like figured out how to do the whole thing and feed Montanans off of local grass-fed food.
That's incredible.
And it's better for the environment, better for the culture, and better for the consumer economically, and all mm-hmm. sorts of things. And they're facing a lot of multitude of issues there, and our country is, but in Montana, you know, you've got development of land is at risk. We need to prioritize preserving wildlife, preserving ranches, private land, as well as public land, for the environment, but then also feeding people. Like 3% of the meat that is made in Montana is consumed by folks in Montana. And that's just a massive indication that like our supply chain for food in this country is totally out of whack. And so... Mm-hmm. Feeding healthy, sustainable food to locals. And the idea is, hey, come here, listen to the music, celebrate our culture. They're going to cook food for you live there. We have these like incredible outdoor backcountry style chefs that'll come and feed the whole thing. For the price of the admission, you get like small bites throughout the day. And then there's a bunch of local makers, saddle makers, silversmiths, like, you know, whatever, sustainable clothes. And then we have a Land Talk Lounge, which is it's under a tent, and it's put on by a big group of nonprofits and soil biologists and ranchers to talk about important topics. So the idea is like, hey, we're doing it here.
Yeah.
We can feed our people. We can employ our people. We can bring people back to work on their family ranches. They don't need to fold. We don't need to sell all this land off to foreign developers to turn into subdivisions. We can meet the conservation efforts and needs there. We can meet the agricultural efforts and the cultural ones, and you can do it too. So mm-hmm. come here, check out what we're doing in Montana. Let's grow this thing. Let's see this happen in the Southwest. Let's see it happen in the Southeast or the Northeast. So that's really a really broad mission that they're trying to accomplish.
What are the dates for that?
It's June 20th through the 22nd.
It's killer.
The summer killer. Solstice. Nice. Yeah.
Love it. Let's wrap this guy up. Dude, thank you so much for doing that. Like this has been so much fun. I'm so fucking glad you came out here, man.
Thank you,
man.
The
song sounded great. I'm stoked to hear all those come out. And yeah, dude, you've been fucking killing it, man. I'm super proud of you.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, guys too. This is a great podcast. Thanks, man. Come on anytime.
Hell yeah,
I appreciate it. Yeah, we'll have you back one day.
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it. Fuck yeah. Thank you, man.
Fuck yeah, dude.
That was killing. That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's gotta be awful.
She's a big
Oh, really?
Fan. That's how I know about
them. Oh, they're great.